On the podcast today, we have Hillary Amato. Welcome, Hillary.
Hi there, Ben. Happy to be here.
Yeah, stoked. Hillary, let me be able to just start by maybe telling us a little about yourself. Who's Hillary?
All right. So I'm a BCBA. I'm from the United States. I'm also an IBA like yourself. Mm. And I have an ABA license from Michigan. And I currently live and work with ABA down in Brazil, working with online supervision of behavior analyst candidates. And I also work online from the United States. And I have an English school where we use ABA to teach English as a second language.
Cool. So how did you get in the field in the first place? How did you come to find ABA?
Well, ABA found me, and I was living in Brazil, and I moved home, and I lived with my sister, who is a BCBA, and I ended up working at the same place she worked, and I just fell in love with it. So, yeah, it was just hard because when I moved back to Brazil around 2011, there just wasn't a lot of ABA around, so it was hard to find a place to work with it, but... Eventually made a way for it to work. So
like, what was it about it? Like what made you fall in love with ABA?
It just made so much sense. And, you know, I just love that it's about, I don't know. It's just about like finding the right contingencies and making the environment work for the learner. And I just love ABA so much. I feel like it doesn't just help, you know, our clients, but it helps you in life as well. You know, like, you know, you're having a bad day. Did something good happen? Well, reinforce that. Reinforce, you know, the behaviors around you, and you're gonna have a better day too. So,
yeah. Where'd you go to school?
So for my bachelor's degree, I went to Western Michigan University. Mm-hmm. And I knew through my sister, I knew a lot of people in the ABA world. Her advisor was Richard Malott, but I didn't know who these people were, and I wasn't in ABA then. So, and then I did my master's degree online.
And was that with a different school? What school was that with?
Of course, that was with Ball State University.
Right. And so, really so why did you do it online? Because you were in Brazil?
Yes, I had to do it online. That would have been the only option.
So, okay, so tell me a little bit about Brazil. How'd you end up in Brazil in the first place?
Well, I was in the Peace Corps in Mongolia. And as most of these stories start, I was on a bus in Mongolia. And I met a crazy guy, Yuri. He's now my husband. And he's Brazilian. So that's how I ended up here.
Gotcha. So you met him in Mongolia, and then what'd you go from Mongolia to Brazil essentially, or?
Essentially, yeah. I just came home to get my visa, and then came here.
So how long have you been in Brazil?
It's been about 14 years now. It's been a good amount of time.
Okay, and when did you start? When did you get your degree and get your BCBA? When was that?
I remember very well, it was during the pandemic. I finished in June or July 2020 and got my BCBA. I must have started in 2018.
Okay, and so when did you start sort of practicing ABA in Brazil? Just then, or 2020, or?
Well, the first year I just studied, but in 2019, I had to find a practicum. So I started working at a company down here, just kind of doing some volunteer supervision kind of stuff. And I officially started my own company in 2021.
Yeah. Cool. And whereabouts in Brazil are you?
So I live in the south. I'm along the coast on an island. The city is called Florianopolis. It's gorgeous, 42 beaches. If you guys ever come to Brazil, I recommend it.
Wow. So okay. How big of an island is that?
It's pretty big. Like, it takes me an hour to drive either north or south, but okay. then like east to west, not so wide. Yeah.
And is there a lot of people there, or?
The whole city, I think, has 500,000 people, I think.
Right. I'm just trying to compare because I live on an island too, up here in kind of northwest Canada. And it's a big island. It's probably, it's probably 50 square miles or something like that.
Nice.
But we only have like 900 people.
Oh, really? Okay.
So, gotcha. So I'm just trying to, and then we've got another island called Salt Spring Island, which is sort of further down south. That's a little more well known in sort of BC anyway. It's about the same size, and we consider that one to be a very busy island with 12,000 people.
Oh, yeah.
Nice. So you've got 500,000. I can't imagine what that'd be like, but yeah, really cool. And so is your husband from there? Is that why you ended up there? Like from that island, or?
Yeah, well, he's from Sao Paulo originally, but or Santos, close to Sao Paulo, but he's been down here like 20 years. So it's you know.
Nice. And what's he into? What's he do?
He is a psychoanalyst.
Oh, which, trippy.
Yeah, and I'm a behavior analyst, which makes raising children together very interesting.
Wow.
But he's actually studying medicine to be a doctor also. So
okay. Yeah. And I'm curious, what's his training as far as being a psychoanalyst? Because, you know, all I know about sort of psychoanalysis is kind of like, you know, old school Freud stuff. So what, yeah.
Well, you know, he's really into Jacques Lacan, and okay. I could not get into the difference between like Freud and Lacan, but right. there is one, and it's important.
There is one, and it's important, but you cannot articulate it. Got it. Funny. So I'm curious, what have those conversations been like? Because I mean, the psychoanalysis is all very, inner world,
yeah,
spiritually kind of stuff. Yeah. A lot of it's, stuff you can't see. And so, egos and ids and all that kind of fun stuff versus, the more observable behavior analysis. How do those dinner conversations go?
It's just really hard because like I give people advice all day long and supervision on how to like do this or that with child raising, and I can't do it at home. Like my daughter has food selectivity, but I can't use edible reinforcers, and but the biggest thing is like whenever I try to like modify a behavior, my husband's always like, well, you're just repressing that and it's going to come back, which is actually something we talk about with punishment, right? But like I'm not using punishment, I use like positive reinforcement. So it's harder, but like in the end it works. When my daughter was about 1.5, she was hitting her head. She's neurotypical, but she was hitting her head on the floor a lot for access to things. Mm-hmm. And so I tried for about 6 months, like till I was blue in the face, to get him to stop it and reinforcing this behavior. And he's telling me, we can't repress this urge, and that what we need to do, Hillary, is we need to like try to figure out what she wants and give it to her before she hits her head. And sometimes the answer is no, and like, when he had taken a couple of classes on psychoanalysis, or sorry, on ABA, and that was before I was in the field. It was just advice that I had gotten. But like when I was finally able to articulate to him that we weren't using punishment, we were just blocking her head and ignoring the child, not the behavior, and it was extinction. As soon as I was able to put it in those technical terms, this is extinction, we're just not reinforcing. He finally said, okay, let's do that. And then in like 3 weeks it was gone.
Wow. So, and so And so the next time something came up, did you have a little more pull or?
No, no pen.
Sorry. It doesn't work like that. One more question, because this is just awesome. I wish I had you both on now. I think it would be an awesome conversation. But I'm curious.
It would be funny.
I'm curious early on, what were his thoughts when you said, you know, honey, I'm getting into behavior analysis.
You know, like, honestly, he wasn't against it or anything. Yeah. He knew that I really cared about it. And yeah. He'll be the first one to tell you, like, I'm not the person. Psychoanalysis is not the place you go to build skills with autism or developmental delays. Right. That's not his population. I think at the end of the day, we both see that we work with different populations. Mm. So, yeah, gotcha. It's just, gotcha. Again, with the kids, it can be hard.
So you might have more struggle if you started getting into ACT and that sort of thing.
Probably. I very much imagine so.
Yeah, right on. Cool. All right. That's interesting. I assume when you started kind of doing this work in Brazil, you were working with autistic folks with the company that you started, right?
Yes.
So what, because I've had a couple folks on now from Brazil talking about, you know, kind of behavior analysis there. So I had Tacita, Misael, and she's kind of more, you know, on the experimental side of ABA and some other, you know, and kind of social justice kind of issues and those sorts of things. And it sounds like from the conversations I've had with her and you, and then as well with Valeria, you know, that's kind of how behavior analysis got to Brazil, was because Fred Keller went on a tour one day and sort of exposed Brazil to the experimental side of ABA and so of behavior analysis, and that's been around for decades, and there's lots and lots of people. Everyone wants to have control of their life, to make their own choices, decisions, and set goals that are meaningful and important to them. And students who are neurodivergent are no exception. Self-determined research indicates a host of positive quality of life outcomes for people who are neurodivergent, including better employment and independent living outcomes. Whether your students want to attend college or obtain employment after high school, they will need to acquire the skills necessary to pursue career life directions that are personally meaningful and are of their own volition. The self-determination course offered by CBI is an ideal tool for teachers to help students develop the essential competencies for self-determined behavior. The course consists of 5 modules with comprehensive lesson plans that include embedded resources, easily adapted for your diverse learners. Using the built-in self-reflection and assessment exercises, teachers can assess students' growth towards their self-determination and self-advocacy behaviors. If you're interested in learning more, check out the CBI Consultants webpage at www.cbiconsultants.com. If you're planning on collecting continuing education credits for this episode, you'll need to enter the 3 secret words at www.cbiconsultants.com/shop. The first secret word is next. Studying it and practicing sort of that side of thing, but not very many folks doing kind of the applied side of things. And Valeria kind of, you know, indicated that as well. And that sounds like she's kind of doing more kind of what you were kind of doing, some more online supervision and kind of training and stuff and trying to get folks certified and so on and so forth. What sort of, give me a bit of a sort of the state of kind of ABA services from when you kind of started doing the work to now, which I know it's only been a couple of years, but it sounds like there's been a few changes.
There have been a few changes, and you know, it's I always need to remind myself that, you know, it wasn't easy peasy in the United States either. Like, mm-hmm. people had to fight for it, but like, yeah. What happens in general in Brazil is that most people who receive true ABA services, which, you know, ABA is an intensive intervention, and we use We work with techs and we provide supervision, so we're able to give that the hours the kid needs every week. And for people to be able to have access to that, it's guaranteed in the Constitution that everything that the doctor recommends needs to be provided by the insurance companies. But that's not what happens. And so people who have true ABA services historically, before recently, had to, well, and they still do, but they had to sue the insurance company to exercise that right. And that, you know, that is expensive and that takes time. And what has been really frustrating is that in the past couple years, and especially like where I live in the past like 6 months, the insurance companies have really pressed back and started winning the lawsuits, or just stopped paying. And you know, they'll get tangled up with lawyers, but they won't pay.
So I've
actually had to close my clinic in the past few months because of this situation. And what the insurance companies are doing is that people who actually do credential their clinics the correct way, so people who don't have these the lawsuits, they pay really low, and they expect just a psychologist. They don't have a lot of behavior analysts down here, but just a psychologist to work, you know, a couple hours with the kid every week, which is not real ABA. So that model, unfortunately, is coming to the forefront. And what's worse is that, like, culturally, because, you know, the kid is working with a psychologist now, and that's the professional, culturally, people are starting to recognize that as quote unquote ABA, and it's not. So.
Okay. So just to backtrack, so the Constitution says that if a doctor basically orders something, insurance has to pay for it.
Yeah.
So what happens when the doctor says child needs ABA?
Mm-hmm.
And then, but then is the problem the doctor isn't specific enough? Like, does the doctor need to say, you know, child needs 30 hours a week of ABA?
He needs to be specific.
Yeah.
What's happening in some cases is that whatever lawyer, I'm not really a lawyer. I'm not really sure on what point they're allowed to turn this around.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also the law system in Brazil is not like, well, we have this precedent, so we all have to follow that precedent. Like, it doesn't work like that. It's just, you know, like judge for judge. And so, like, they have just started either winning the lawsuit or just like pushing things back. And then it just puts such a financial strain on the family when, you know, you're 6 months behind. The clinic said, we're not working with this kid anymore. And just like de facto, the insurance company wins, you know.
And so when they win, then it just goes back to sort of that. But they still have to provide something, no? When they win,
yeah, so
and that's that 2 hours a week or whatever with a psychologist.
Yeah, and there are some clinics that are actually credentialed that are finding a way to make it work and still provide the number of hours that the kid needs. But it's just becoming fewer and far between when it comes to people who are credentialed with the insurance companies.
What's that mean? What's it mean to be credentialed with the insurance company versus not?
Well, I was never credentialed with the insurance company. So only people who had won a lawsuit against the insurance company and had something called a limner, I guess you would say in English, they would do services, and by way of their lawyer, things would go to the insurance company, and the insurance company would pay. But I was not credentialed with the insurance company.
So the only way you get credentialed is if you sue them.
Oh, no. I mean, to get credentialed, you send in paperwork, you do the normal thing, and then you agree on a price. But like the price the insurance company pays is going to be, oh, I guess if you recalculated it to US dollars, which I'm more familiar with, it would be something like $20 or $30 an hour. Mm. So like, it's kind of like enough to pay a tech, but it's not really enough to pay a team, you know?
Right. Wow. Okay. So then what are people doing? I mean, are kids just not getting services? Like, what's the solution, or is there one?
So, because culturally people are kind of the idea a lot of people have right now is like, oh, you're working with a psychologist, not like a tech. I should be leaving my kid with some tech. Mm. So also it's more convenient if it's just 2 hours a week. So unfortunately, culturally, a lot of people are taking this as like true ABA and oh, my kid's doing ABA, so I'm good. But like people who want real services, you know, they are protesting, like there are videos you can find on Instagram of people like, hey, my kid's been without services for 6 months. Hey, where's my reimbursement, the insurance company? And there are, and I'm actually friends with a lawyer in Brasilia who's, you know, kind of working within the system to change how things are going. So. Yeah, a lot of things are happening, and hopefully it will be corrected at some point. But yeah, that's what's going on.
Mm. Wow. Okay. And I suppose then there's always like everywhere the option too of paying out of pocket if you got the money. And there are folks doing that are getting more services, but they're paying for it all themselves.
You know, it's pretty expensive. So
would a behavior analyst be like, you know, with the exchange rate or whatever, would they be making a similar amount that they'd be making in the States there if people were fully paying and whatnot? Or is sort of the expected wage a bit lower because it's a different country or whatever? I don't even know what the cost of living is there. So,
I think that it's pretty comparable, but like I'll just tell you, some things in Brazil, they have this thing where some things cost more than they do in the States sometimes. I charged when I had my clinic. A lot less than other companies were charging. Right. I was charging 150 reais an hour, which is like five times less, like maybe like $30 an hour or something like that. But like other clinics were charging more, like 50. And I knew I could have done that, but I didn't want to. Like I wasn't comfortable with it. When I was getting my BCBA certificate and I was looking for supervision, they were charging at the time, 350 was a lot more. So they were charging more than I had to pay for in the States. Like I ended up paying like 65 in the States and it was less. I'm not really great at math, but yeah.
Did you get your supervision in the States then?
Yeah. Online.
Yes, yeah. Gotcha. Cool. And then you say you're also licensed in Michigan. So do you practice in the States too?
I do practice in the States too. Yeah, I was until like the past couple of months working out of Sheboygan, Michigan, but I've since changed to working out of California. So yeah.
Okay, and is that are you still working with your sister?
Well, I am working with my sister now. I was working with a Michigan-based company before.
So she's in California.
She's in California.
Gotcha. Cool. Hang on. Okay. So what? So you've closed. You've kind of shut that down. So otherwise, you're doing the work in the States, and then you're doing supervision of folks that are trying to get certified.
Yes. And actually, I'm really enjoying that because that is something that's really hard to find down here in Brazil. A lot of people, that's their biggest barrier, is they're not able to find a supervisor for their supervision hours. So, yeah.
So, and I'm just trying to wrap my brain around the idea that there's all this insurance problems. People are closing their businesses. Some people can't even provide services or afford services. So why is there a demand for more for supervisors? Like, why are people continuing to want to get credentialed down there?
Well, that's actually a really hard question, but the fact is, we have, just like everywhere else in the world, we have rising rates of autism, and we have professionals who have fallen in love with ABA and want to make it work. And there are a lot of ways to make things happen. It's just, I felt, culturally, I just don't know how things work down here. So I said, I'm just going to close this because there are just too many unexpected things happening. But I'm sure, like Brazilians who know things, how things work and can, have a bigger network, can,
Sure.
find a way to make it work. Well, at the end of the day, there are a lot of ways to do things, and so they're making it happen, and we need it down here, so.
And you're supervising folks for IBAO credentials. Is that what you're doing mostly, or?
That's kind of starting to take off now. Most of the people that search out supervision are looking for the QBA degree. But I have heard, more and more people talking about the IBAO down here. So hopefully that's going to take off, just because I personally think that's really important, because down here in Brazil, we have this really weird prejudice against people with the MA master's degree versus the MS master's degree. And yeah, the QABA haven't made that really clear in that translation, that they do accept both MA and MS master's degrees. So people just assume, because of the translation, it's just MS. And because I did the IBAO translations, I was just like, nope, it's both. So, yeah.
So when you have an MA, what does that mean down there to people? It means you're just less than?
Yes. Yes, it's just not as impressive, and like they every school that advertises their class, they're like, all of our teachers at the school have the MS master's degree, and that's what makes our program worthwhile. And really, people, I was shocked, because I thought that all the BCBAs down here in Brazil were aware that they had obtained a certificate that was available to lowly MA master's degree people. But even like a few months ago, we're in a WhatsApp group that someone put, I just can't see how they have been debating about what the regulation should be, because we don't have an official certificate yet. But they're like, I just don't see, everybody in this group has the MS master's degree, right? And we all agree that this is just so important. And I had to really point out, there are a lot of us in here who studied in the US and just have an MA master's degree, including myself. So yeah, I'm just really trying to spread the news about that, because
And the actual
people just.
degree isn't any different, is it? I mean, like if you have an MS in ABA or an MA in ABA, you still
Yeah,
took all the same
there's not
kind
a
of
big difference.
courses.
And what really kills me is, in the US, that the MA master's degree is 280 hours at minimum, or more, but at minimum. And down here it's 360. So it's even more hours, than it is in the US. And down here in Brazil, when you get a bachelor's degree, you do an extra fifth year where you put together dissertation thesis kind of a thing. So like everything in their educational system is, you know, much more impressive than it is most of the rest of the world, but it just, it's still not enough. So
yeah. So you're talking about, so are there actual ABA programs then in Brazil, like in universities or?
Yes. And it's, you know, kind of like the US, if you actually start to notice. I'm sorry with all these comparisons with the US. How it is in Canada. But like where most of the programs are MA degrees and they're much easier to hire teachers for, they're more accessible for online classes. And there are many fewer MA degrees. But the thing is, in Brazil, what is the number? Somewhere between, there are actually between eight and 11 actual MS ABA master's degrees. And like, you have to physically go to the school. They're not available online. You have to close your business, bring your family, like, you know, figure your entire life out to go and study that. And those are geared towards people who want to be university professors. They're academic courses. They're not practical courses. And then there are a whole bunch of varying degrees of quality. And maybe that's part of the problem of the MA master's degrees, both physical locations and online. And yeah, there are some kind of not so great quality, but I think that should be the conversation then, as opposed to like.
The second secret word is government.
Let's just like throw these all out. Because so many people's perception of what a behavior analyst is, it would mean that anyone from outside of Brazil would have to go back and obtain a new bachelor's degree starting from zero. You already did an MA degree, we'll start from zero and do an MS degree. So like they just don't have any pathways where you can just jump in and like, hey, my kid has autism and I would really love to work with him. I want to learn all about ABA. Well, go back and study psychology. Or by the way, it could be dentistry. It could be orthodontics,
right?
According to Brazilians, because it's health and education. But like, you can't just jump in and start doing an MA degree online and actually learn things that would help your child. So, yeah.
But so these in-person ABA programs in Brazil, but are they? They're not geared towards certification. They're geared towards academics and academia.
Yeah, they don't have an official certification yet. They have one psychology council that's put one forth within the past year with these super super high credential requirements. But yeah, like
were any of them of them like the VCS for the BACB prior to them pulling out, and now they're just, you know, not that.
I mean, there are still VCS programs around Brazil, and they're there for the QBA and for the IBAO.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know about the MS programs being VCSs.
And of course, the IBAO doesn't even necessarily require either M, right? And so, I'm curious, have you supervised folks that have taken that other, the other pathway, sort of the non-master's pathway?
One person did approach me, but didn't end up doing the supervision. Definitely a tricky thing there is very likely going to be the insurance companies, although the insurance companies can't decide what it is they want you to have. It changes all the time. They're very likely going to require some kind of master's level something.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering, because it's one thing I liked about the IBAO is that they offered different options there, especially in these countries. I mean, Brazil is different, but these countries they just don't exist, right? There's no programs around, or the only option is online, and the online programs are in languages that they don't use, you know, English or whatever. And And so they have this other option, but I didn't think of the idea that after all that, they still might not be considered behavior analysts.
Yeah. Yeah. No, for sure. That's one thing I really like about the IBAO is having that experience course, because, it's just so necessary in some places. And I would like to see that work here too, but it's just like culturally, I would be very surprised if it worked here. Mm. So.
All right. Okay. So sounds like it's a tough gig working in ABA in Brazil. What about sort of just autism in general in Brazil? Where are things at? Is sort of like everywhere else, where in the big cities there's some pretty good awareness, acceptance, and but in the rural areas it's 300 years back? Or what's it like in Brazil?
It's like we have a long way to go. It's just that so many people's perception of ABA is that it should be a psychologist and just right. A couple hours a week. And, there are a good number of people who know what ABA is and know that the difference it makes when you have that, that good weekly number of contact hours. So I just think it's about getting the message out. And I just, one message that I really want people to be aware of is like, when I work, I've had days before, because a lot of my stuff is online, where I'll just do like Brazil, US, Brazil, US, Brazil, US. Mm. And, I'll go from like, hey, this kid is getting, 15 to 20 hours a week of ABA to a kid that's getting like 6 hours a week of ABA. Mm. And just back and forth like that, when I'm doing like supervision and everything. And it's just like, to see that extreme difference in behavior problems. Like I'll go from the kid getting 20 hours a week, he'll be in for 8 hours today. And a couple of times he might try to like swat at his, his tech, but he gets his work done, he has fun, he does some life skills, like does his programs. And then I'll go to the kid who's doing like 6 hours a week and we can't run programs. I'm telling people to go back and work on building rapport and, let's come up with a behavior plan here. And, we can't even, I have had kids come in for evaluation definitely down here physically who like, I can't run the VB map because, I have to go straight to the FBA because this kid has so much problem behavior. Mm. And like the 3 hours a week he was doing at his psychologist before this, it didn't work out. So it's just like this very night and day difference that I see with kids who are getting the hours a week that they need versus the kids that aren't. So
well, it's got to be kind of, because 2 hours a week, for the 2 hour week thing, 2 hour weeks wouldn't be doing anything, right? Like it's essentially 2 hours of daycare. And so it's not making any difference in the child's life. So does that then mean that sort of ABA is sort of becoming, people must then think ABA sucks, right? Because ABA doesn't do anything, right? It's ineffective. Yeah. We give you 2 hours as a psychologist and nothing? Come on. What's the point of ABA? Let's try something different. So are families, as a result of this sort of not seeking out ABA and looking for kind of other services, or just trial and error, or what are folks doing?
It's the most frustrating thing, is because they often see it as like, it wasn't working out with this person, as opposed to it wasn't working out because we didn't have the contact hours we needed. Mm. So that's a really frustrating thing, is that people don't always see the problem for what it is. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I do sometimes fear that people are going to get the wrong idea of what ABA is and what it can do just because they don't see what it can do.
Are there like other services, like that not sort of non-ABA services that insurance pays more for or that folks get more of just because people think it's cooler, you know?
They still have to even fight for getting, you know, OT or getting SLP or anything like that. They have to fight for those hours. But like one really cool thing I can tell you here in Florianopolis is like the speech language pathologists here are so good and know so much about ABA that you can consider that they get an extra couple of hours of ABA. And so that's really, that's a big plus. And for whatever reason, I hear a lot of the clinics, the OT and everybody, the insurance company is like drunk going back and forth about like if people need that, at least an MAA master's degree or not. But they'll say, hey, you're at this clinic that works with ABA. You're an OT. Well, you have to have an MA in ABA. So there are bunches of speech language pathologists and TOs and everything that know a lot about ABA and, you know, like kind of end up working with it too. So whatever reason that happens. One thing that I could mention to you is that a big gap that I see in Brazil, and I'm not saying I would be qualified to handle this myself, but a big gap that I see is like, in the United States, you know, and it's sad when that happens, when a kid has behavior problems to the extreme where they need like to be put into an institution for a couple of months. That's really sad. And we don't want that to happen, but we have that option if that behavior gets so extreme. And down here, we don't have that option. And even like, the special education schools that you can find, a lot of times the problem behavior kids, they just put them in a room and just kind of leave them there all day. There's no intervention that's kind of put in. And so there's no place that parents would have to bring their kid who wasn't getting the hours he needed. His behavior has gotten so bad that they can't really manage their lives. There's no place they can bring him so he can get back to the place that he needs to be. So like just regular ABA services could work. So it's so hard when I, you know, go in to do a supervision and I see all these problem behaviors and I say like, oh, this kid just came in, but like, listen, you guys really aren't there yet to handle this extreme behavior. And they're like, yeah, but where else is he going to go?
Yeah.
Like, so it's just, it's just really hard. Just having an institutional structure where kids always find the right placement that they need for them to succeed. So
what happens to these kids? Do they end up in the prison system or?
Families would have to figure that out individually, what they can do. Awful things happen, and families might leave their children, like put them up for adoption or whatever. But the worst part is there's just not always that place where they can then bring the child so that the child can have some kind of quality of life. So, yeah.
What happens in Brazil with the adults?
Well, I always like, I have a lot of translated material from the States and I go to translate things like day program or, you know, group home.
Yeah.
it's hard. Like adults with developmental delays, like they stay home and they need like daycare, like care during the day, not daycare. The families find something on their own or, you know, sometimes just leave them home alone. Yeah, so it can be really hard. One thing I noticed that really surprised me when I first moved here is, like, I wouldn't say specifically autism, but like, but people with the whole variety of different handicaps are much, it's much more acceptable for them to be in the workplace, it seems to me. They have like public spots available, and you know, quotas on the number of individuals that they'll bring in. So like you'll see more acceptance of, you know, the differently abled in society, which is really nice. But yeah, if there's no way for the individual to work at the same time, and they're not going to have, they don't have a lot of like work programs. If the kid works, it's because they find a way to make it work. But like, there's not a lot of assistance in helping with that. Of course, in places like Sao Paulo, or now I wouldn't even say Rio, maybe, but Rio is pretty far behind with ABA as far as I understand. But like, maybe in some place like Sao Paulo, you might have a couple group homes, you might have a couple day programs. I haven't heard about it, but I imagine that they could exist.
Right. Something you have to see is, especially in some of these countries where there's maybe not great services, folks just go somewhere else to get services. Yeah. Are there like neighboring countries where things are better that folks sometimes go to, or do you know?
Where I live, people go to the U.S. or England.
Right.
I've heard about that happening. I haven't heard about people going to neighboring countries.
Okay, so shifting a bit here, tell me a little bit about your English school.
Well, so like when I started getting into ABA, I wanted to test out the VB map a couple times, so I ran it with my son. And I noticed how great it was about developing languages, and during the pandemic my kids weren't speaking Portuguese anymore, so I made curriculum for them based on the VB map in Portuguese. And so then I just ended up kind of finishing the work and putting it together so that, like, especially like those younger learners, like until like 4 years old or maybe a bit more, like to have kind of like those developmental milestones as, you know, as guides to help learn English. So yeah, I put that together, and then, you know, that's for the younger kids. And I just, like, the older the kid gets, I feel like the harder it gets to use ABA. Like when you get to an adult, what can you use? Well, you can't really do too much errorless. I do that with the kids, but errorless, not really for adults. But I might do some, like, a couple antecedent prompts here or there, and like just kind of quizzing people. But yeah, I just, like, for the younger learners, I just love ABA as an approach for language development.
What's that look like? How is it actually used? Like, how do you do that?
I really just make a curriculum that has manned, attacked, and echoic, you know, like listener response, and try to go through all those different areas. And depending on the kids and where they're at, I might put in a couple of like social goals where they have to, like, be able to have this conversation with.
The third secret word is school.
The friend instead of just me. So like, yeah, I just, you know, we have that manding goal, so we work on it until we have 3 days at 80% or more, and then we kick it up a notch. So
yeah. And are these like, these aren't autistic kids, these are just anyone that just wants to learn English, kind of thing. And so how does kind of what you're doing differ from these sort of ESL programs?
Well, like, you know what, What bothered me before I did this is like I had a mom tell me like, hey, my 4-year-old, she wants to learn English, and we took her out of the school she was at because they were just having her draw pictures all day, and like they didn't really seem to be working on anything. They were just speaking English around her. And at the time I thought, well, I can do the same thing that they're doing. But I didn't feel, and I can try to make it more fun, and I can try to make her speak English more or whatever, but I didn't really feel like I had any concrete reason to believe that I was going to be doing anything different than any other English school. But I just like what it comes down to is having daily goals to make sure that this child is interacting with you. And if the kid doesn't know how to answer in English yet because they don't speak English, you use prompts, and then they're speaking English from day one. And every time they need to go to the bathroom, they need to ask in English. They want to drink some water, let's ask in English. They want that toy. You get it. Just making sure that their interactions happen in English. And when I like go to the English schools, what I see is like, really, they just, and they'll tell you that this is the immersion technique. People talk about like, oh, immersion is so great. We lived in England, we were immersed, blah, blah. But immersion just is about being in the environment and being around the language until you feel comfortable speaking, as opposed to from day one, we're going to prompt you and make sure you are speaking. So.
So immersion is more, and I mean, I'm sure there's more to it, and I've got a buddy that does a lot of this stuff, and I should probably talk to him someday, but essentially, it's sort of like osmosis. You're like in the context of the language and getting it. So, and if you start at a young enough age where the brain's still, developing, then they'll sort of sponge more of it versus like immersion might not work so well with maybe an adult. Although it could work. I still have this memory of being in a, I think I was like 25 in a bar in Montreal. And I didn't really speak any French, and by the end of the night in the bar, just by standing around all the other people ordering drinks, I was ordering my drinks in French, and no, and no one taught me. There was no direct teaching there. So it probably could work for the adults too. I'm curious if are you also teaching reading English?
Oh yeah, we do reading. It's just like with the age group that I mean to start with, like it would be pre-reading kind of stuff, but we have like the three levels of the BBMAP kind of like developmental ages laid out, and it does go into reading and stuff. And like I taught both my kids to read, so yeah, it does go into reading. But like it's pretty basic there. I guess like it's just like the BBMAP, like it's not really like academic based, because once a kid is like at a place where they can be in a textbook, like I can't, like I usually just follow the textbook. So that's like 7 years on, we just follow the textbook. And I don't want to sound like I have anything against immersion. I don't. I just want to improve upon immersion. Immersion is important. You do, like, you're around it, you hear it, you absorb it. That happens. I'm just saying, like, kick it up a notch and make sure that the kid is also using it, as opposed to just like the receptive responding. They're also expressively responding. So.
No, that's cool. That's cool. And so how much time would you spend with a typical kid doing that?
So, like, I would love to fully open a school, English school, and do like 20 hours a week, or like, every afternoon. In schools in Brazil, you do mornings or afternoons. So, like, we never have that problem like in the States, where all the kids' hours, all of your caseload is after 3 o'clock. You're going to have some morning kids, some afternoon kids,
Gotcha.
and you're going to be done by 5 or 6. But I would love to open a real English school, but again, that thing in Brazil where everyone has to be like that specific professional and don't even try to change your area unless you're willing to start over, because I'm not, I don't have a pedagogy degree. I can't officially open a school. So
you'd have to go back and get your bachelor's and your MS in education and do all that in order to be allowed to open a school, essentially.
Likely,
yeah.
Wow. But I might do it anyway, because it's just like a hobby thing too. Yeah. Like I have it open as like a place where your kids can, like, as a hobby, learn a language. Mm. If we get a reputation as being a good school, I suppose that I could try to do that. So right. I'm just trying to build it up through time and see.
So it's early days. So how many kids are you working with right now then?
We've got about like 30 kids.
Okay. But, and are they all there together at the same time, or are you kind of different times, different kids sort of thing? And
they do the unrecommended 1 or 2 hours a week, but right.
Yeah. And folks just kind of pay for that out of pocket, I guess.
Yeah.
Right on. Okay, cool. So so I touched a little bit about some goals there. Any other sort of future plans with all these changes coming up? Like where do you kind of see yourself in 5 years?
Good question. I'm really hoping that things turn around in Brazil with what requirements behavior analysts are expected to have. I would love to open a clinic again, but if not, I'm really happy working online. I'm really happy where I'm at, and I do feel like I can make a difference with supervision. So
yeah. Cool. Right on. And I know you've been involved with the IBAO from the beginning, and you've already talked about how you've translated lots of stuff for them, which is awesome. Anything kind of cool and exciting happening with the IBAO? I haven't really given the world an update since I had Mike on a while back. So anything cool happening in the IBAO that you know of?
We recently set some. Mike was working with some kind of credentialing team. I think we're still working on that whole process, and I was part of that process. So I think there's like a week where I was in there every morning.
That sounded pretty intense. Yeah.
So we helped kind of establish some job requirements for different certificates and that kind of stuff, educational stuff. That was exciting. So hopefully that will help us along in that process.
Cool. Right on. Well, sounds like lots of things happening, and hopefully the climate shifts a bit in Brazil and you'll be able to get back to doing what you were doing again and start your company up again and get back to serving clients as soon as some of these lawsuits and different protests and whatnot sort of hopefully bring something to fruition. It sounds like you got a bit of a better government than you had in the past, so maybe there'll be some take on some of that stuff.
Yeah, I'm hoping that, but it's also kind of like it goes back and forth kind of wildly.
Right.
So,
Are all those decisions made like federally, or does Brazil like have sort of like provinces or states or anything like that that sort of make sort of their own decisions on these things? Or
we do have states, but it doesn't really work like that, where it would be a statewide decision or something. So it's something that need to happen on the national level. Like there's definitely movement going in that direction. Gotcha. So I do have a lot of hope, but I don't know how long it's going to take or what victory will look like exactly. Yeah.
But it sounds like you got enough to do to keep you busy till it happens.
Exactly.
Cool. Right on. Well, thanks, Hillary. It was a good to get a little insight into the state of things in Brazil and just kind of hear about what you're doing.
Thanks for the interview and thanks for everything.
Hey, that's yours.